to which the current lack of a comprehensive policy and legislative framework contributes to the acquisition, use, and investment in land by non-South African citizens. Thirdly, they were to examine whether governments should and how monitor and intervene by policy, legislative, and other means in preventing any possible negative consequence of land acquisition and use by non-South African citizens. They were further to investigate the impact on property markets of land acquisition and use by non-South African citizens, distinguishing between land use for residential, commercial, agricultural, ecotourism, general tourism, game lodge, and golf course purposes. In order to justify the study and the recommendation, a comparative international study had to be embarked on, and they were to look at laws, policies, impacts on the use of land ownership by non-South Africans in selected international countries, in Africa as well as Europe, North America, and Australasia. And the panel of experts had their job done between 2004 August and March 2007. In March 2007, the panel of experts headed by Professor Bhutto presented the report to the Minister of Land Affairs. The report provides indicative data and information as far as ownership of land by foreign individual juristic purpose is concerned. It does not pronounce on corporate ownership of land because that's a very complicated and detailed matter. The panel engaged other consultants to investigate the phenomena of corporate ownership of land, looking at PCs to attract. There is a separate report on that. Our report briefly in terms of the negative results and problems encountered to that end, and how the panel says, in the absence of adequate data on corporate ownership of land, what should be done to access the picture around corporate ownership of land? The ownership of land, the report says that the ownership of land by foreign natural persons varies between 1% and 3%, depending on the category of land in question. There's that range. Ownership by foreign natural persons is significantly higher in percentages in coastal and game farming areas, and of land in the categories of urban or residential plots, agricultural holdings, farmland, and sectional title land. A distinction needs to be made between individual and corporate ownership of land in South Africa. Individual foreign ownership of land in South Africa varies between 1% for residential houses to 3% for sectional title property. The values of these properties are more or less in line with the number of them. In the slide before you, there is a table you might want to follow. Corporate ownership is more problematic to determine and clear distinctions at statistical level between foreign and South African owned is not yet possible. There are a number of factors. When the Commission appointed consultants to deal with this phenomenon, In March this year, a report was given. It was not very positive. It showed that when you look at CCs that you get from FIFO data, it's very easy. You know, out of 1,600 companies that were looked at, less than 1% of those companies were foreign owned, less than 1%. Now, when you look at Trust and the other companies, where you don't have to go through Citro database, you have to go through the master's office, you have to go through third parties to access that data because from the market, because that depends on the response given through that long route. And they were given only 3 months to the job. And there was nothing significant coming out of that investigation because the information that they were getting was dependent on people that they wrote to responding, and very few responses. If the period had been 1 year or 2 years, it could have been better because one would also go to court to require certain people to respond. Given that they were only had 3 months, you know, the picture that was making was not really encouraging. Given that this problem experience, the commission, the experts then recommended that in order to access that data, the only way to do it is by disclosure of titles, past, present and future, for all juristic persons in South Africa as well as corporations. That way we will be able to determine who owns South Africa and to distinguish between ownership in terms of South African citizens and ownership in terms of foreign owners. In the absence of implementing that disclosure recommendation is really problematic. And we have abandoned the idea of going the research way through consultants in terms of determining the extent of corporate ownership of land. We feel that implementing that disclosure recommendation of the panel is the only way to deal with this problem. If you look at the table on page 5, slide 10, I provide also the explanation for you for that table. This table means that business and other corporate bodies own 4.67 of all the residential houses in South Africa. These houses occupy 4.13% of the total land used for residential housing. And the value of these properties or houses is 64% of all houses. They also own 27% of all farms in South Africa, which have a combined value of 78% of the total value of farms in the country. It is clear from the table that although the number of properties in each of the four categories, which is your urban residential properties, farmlands, agricultural holdings, and stationary title properties, it is clear from the table that although the number of properties in each of the four categories and their physical size are relatively small, their value is high. It is the value. But, we must check into account. It means that there are properties mainly in the upper market, which also means that they have a high value for speculation purposes. It is therefore important to interpret the statistics in terms not only of their number, the number of properties, but also of their value, and therefore their possible impact on the property market. The panel of experts concludes that considering all this justifies the regulation of land for its use for land reform and housing purposes. If you turn on to page 8, slide 15, the panel establishes that the Lagos national policy on the regulation of foreign ownership of land in South Africa is certainly not the norm in the world, including countries with comparable economic systems and levels of development, and countries with more advanced economies. Some form of regulation is therefore important, irrespective of the extent of ownership and use of the land. A lot of people are saying the percentage is so minuscule, so what? as we have shown in the analysis here, that it's the value. And the absence of policy justifies this country coming up with policy regulating foreign ownership of land in line with international trends. Having said this, what are the concrete recommendations that panel of experts are putting forward? First important recommendation is that page 8, I'm looking at page 8, slide 15, The panel of experts are saying that it is very important that there should be compulsory disclosure of nationality, race, and gender, and other information. What is other information? Those of you who have got the report, the other information is included on page 38. Apart from indicating your nationality, your race and gender, we need also, as you register your land or your title, we need to know your citizenship, your whether you are permanent resident in case you are not a citizen. The set of permanent residence status. South African national identification number will also have a foreign passport says this document. I'm not going to go through the other information that is required. But it's a comprehensive list of information that is required to enable the state to determine who owns South Africa at the end of the day. How do we do that, this disclosure? The panel of experts recommends two measures, legislative measures. Firstly, the amendment of Regulation 18 of the Deed Registry Act to provide, to require that information of this nature to be provided for by whoever buys and registers land in the Deed Office. The other measure is by way of amending the Principal Act, the Deed Registry Act of 1937, Act number 47 of 1937. This is the most important of all the recommendations. This has to be done along the lines of the Financial Intelligence Center and the Parliament. You will know that 2 years ago, each one of us who has got money in the bank, whether CASA, Standard Bank, whatever bank you were required by the Financial Intelligence Center Act of 2005 to declare certain information so that the state knows who you are. And this disclosure, compulsory disclosure recommendation, is to be in line with the FICA requirement. This is not unique to South Africa. Other countries in the world have done it. America has done it. And people have placed a lot of issue around race. It is important to know by race, it is not bringing in the previous race classification issues. We need to know for transformation purposes. If we don't know who owns what by race and gender, then how would we determine our achievement of transformation through land reform over a period of time? That is important. I think we need to highlight that. Second recommendation of the panel of experts says there must be special ministerial approval for certain changes in land use and disposal of certain categories of land to foreigners, especially where such change of land use or disposal has the potential to negatively impact on the state's constitutional obligations to effect land reform, land that is subject to restitution claims, or that is earmarked for redistribution or independent human settlement. Currently, there exists a state disposal committee and their provisions allowing for the establishment of provisional statements before the committees. These committees have no jurisdiction over municipal lands that continue to be incorrectly and unconstitutionally categorized as private land. Furthermore, not all provinces have passing committees. As a third tier of government, municipalities may own and dispose of land registered in their name. This category of land falls within the ambit of public land, it's not private land. Although municipalities may deal with land which they own within the limits of the relevant legislation, objectives of government as a whole should be considered when disposing of public land, which includes land from all the three spheres of government in the spirit of cooperative governance, as required in terms of the Constitution. For this reason, the national, provincial, and municipal spheres of government should be represented at the provincial statements before the committees that currently exist to achieve the synergy required by the Constitution. Third recommendation, my presentation, page 11, slide 21. The experts recommend that a permanent interministerial oversight committee consisting of the Department of Agriculture, Land Affairs, Provincial and Local Governments, Environmental Affairs, and Tourism and Housing must be established as a matter of fact. Such a committee has to monitor trends in foreign ownership of land and changes in use, and they are required to recommend to government appropriate corrective action or intervention. Page 12, slide 23. The Interministerial Oversight Committee has to be supported by an interdepartmental task team. The ministers have to appoint persons with relevant skills to be part of the envisaged interdepartmental task team. This interdepartmental task team will also be involved in giving effect to recommendation 1, dealing with disclosure. The amendments to the GIS Registry Act and Regulation 18 of the GIS Regulation Act have to be attended to by this interdepartmental task team. I'm happy to report that on recommendation 3, the minister has already given effect to that. On the 19th of September, to set up an inter-ministerial committee made up of 5 ministers: Minister of Public Works, Minister of Land Affairs, Minister of Provincial and Local Government, Minister of Environmental and Tourism, and Minister of Housing. The ministers were requested by the chairperson of that IMC to nominate officials in their department who will make up that interdepartmental task team, technical team, to support the ministers in their discharge of duties, as I've already alluded to, the monitoring of trends in foreign ownership of land and making recommendations to government for appropriate action. I think that's a positive move already. You know, the committee is already in place, and officials nominated to this interdepartmental team are already preparing for their first meeting to consider what needs to be done to support the minister in giving effect to recommendation 3 of the panel of experts. Recommendation 4 has to do with classified or protected areas or outright prohibition of ownership of land by foreigners. They are saying there must be prohibition of private ownership of land by foreigners and in some cases nationals in certain areas to be classified on grounds of national interest, environmental consideration, national security. Already we have such areas in the country: the national key points, the coastal areas, the conservation areas, land close to military installations, water catchment areas, or land along borders or international boundaries. Recommendation number 5. There must be limited temporary moratorium only before that of payment to foreigners. A moratorium of about 2 years prohibiting disposal of statement to foreigners and in limited cases to nationals who do not qualify for redress under the National Land Reform Program should be put in place. This is not a blanket prohibition, but it is meant to prevent certain spheres of government and organs of state from disposing of land that may be used for land reform and human settlement for the dispossessed and marginalized individuals and communities. This is taken not by the land. That moratorium, it must be clear. It cannot apply on private land because it would be impinging on Section 25 of the Constitution, the property clause. The state can impose such a moratorium on the land that it owns, whether it's national land, provincial land, or municipal land. Such a moratorium could be lifted once the ministerial approval process and the interministerial committee suggested above has been established and operational. Legislation including municipal bylaws and ordinances that categorize land belonging to any organ of state or sphere of government as private land would be unconstitutional, and the Constitutional Court may be approached for an order under Section 167, subsection 5 of the Constitution for an appropriate declaration. Recommendation number 6. The panel of experts recommend the rationalization and harmonization of land use planning and zoning laws through the enactment of overarching national legislation. This they say should be prioritized. To this end, it is comforting to know that already we have got the Land Use Management Bill, which is on its way to Cabinet, which is an overarching piece of legislation that achieves exactly the gives effect to this recommendation. Recommendation number 7, slide 31. The panel of experts recommend that all three spheres of government should be covered by all the recommendations in this report, and that all governments and all organs of state, including all other state entities or institutions, ought to lead by example in implementing the regulatory regime on foreign ownership of land, and a general prohibition of disposal or change in land use that may undermine land reform, the attainment of integrated human settlement, and therefore compromise the sovereignty of the nation and its citizens. Recommendation number 8. The panel of experts is saying that in line with the practice in some countries, that government may consider medium and long-term leases of public land as a viable mechanism for future acquisition of land and interest in land by foreigners. They are saying ownership, outright ownership, no, on public land. Give foreigners limited leasehold, possibly up to 39 years or so, because after that expiry period, that land reverts back to the state. 99-year leaseholds are really tantamount to outright ownership because it's over how many generations. So some of us may not live to see that land revert to the state. It's too long a period. I think even for investment purposes, 39 to 40 years is a reasonable period for anyone wanting to access land in South Africa on a leasehold arrangement, and then make investment and realize their investment. 10 years may not be adequate for anyone to do this, but we must consider putting a limited period for these leaseholds. Clearly on public land, therefore, outright ownership is out of question. Recommendation number 9. in order to give effect to some of the recommendations through the panel says there must be an enabling legislative mechanism. And this is to be done through a comprehensive general laws or land matters amendment bill, similar to judicial matters amendment bill that the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development use. The advantage of having this is that such an approach is that the approach would limit certain approach is that the consequences to the other pieces of legislation that may arise from the amendments to a specific act or act are easily catered for in one single bill. This is why it is important to have those five ministries, so that when we do amendments to the Deeds Registry Act and the regulation, there is an impact on those of Obamacare and other ministries. So it makes sense that whatever amendments we make, those affected should also incorporate their amendments in this one single amendment bill to avoid any conflict that may arise in future. Lastly, but not the least, the panel of experts says that funding has been identified as an issue that can undermine the government's policy on land reform and the regulation of foreign land ownership. They therefore recommend that measures should be put in place to cater for the occurrence of this phenomenon in policy and legislative developments. And once that has been done, they are saying consideration may be given to various sanctions, including forfeiture, where I, as a South African citizen, have been used by a foreign agent as a plan to acquire land on their behalf. You know, this has been happening in South Africa since 1552, with the enactment of laws that we all know. You know, when Africans were not required to buy land in certain areas, missionaries came in to buy land on their behalf. They were used as funds. It's all recorded. You know, and I remember someone was saying, you bought it from Johannesburg today. You think that all the land is owned by white? No. Indians used the white to acquire land because they were not allowed to buy. So this funding phenomena continues to be used today. There was a special case in Devon where someone who was functionally literate was put as a director of a company, earning a salary when he was seated at home, but he was a director of a company. That was done as part of the funding mechanism. They are saying here we should be sensitive to such things occurring, and where we see them occurring, we must put a sanction so that it doesn't occur. It's a difficult thing to deal with, knowing what human beings are, you know.
They are very innovative.
One lawyer was even saying to me that he needs to be part of this because he knows he was facilitating these funding processes in the past. He knows how to circumvent them now in a different dispensation. What are the constitutional underpinnings of this recommendation? I will refer you to section 21, subsection 3 of the Constitution, which talks about the right of everyone to have adequate access to the right of every citizen to enter, to remain, and to reside anywhere in the Republic. I would also refer you to section 25, subsection 5 of the Constitution, which says that the state has an obligation to take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to force acquisitions which enable citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. I underline citizens. Section 26 also dealing with access to housing. It's very important. As I've been talking about in my previous presentation, integrated human settlement. I think that is the constitutional foundation of the recommendation. If anyone contests them, I think they would have to go back to the Constitution and say, these recommendations are in line with what our Constitution demands. As I said, this report was presented to the Minister on March 6, 2007. The Minister accepted the report. I'm on slide 38, page 19. The Minister accepted the report in principle, subject to further consultation with its key stakeholders in government and outside government. On the 18th July, the panel of experts made a presentation to cabinet. And on the 27th of July, cabinet made an in principle acceptance of the report, subject to certain things being done. Cabinet wanted an amplification of the section dealing with international comparative experiences and an amplification of the experiences of Scotland in the United Kingdom. They wanted also an alignment of these recommendations with better policies that currently exist with various ministries. They wanted the development of a comprehensive communication strategy to more manage the fallout that might come. You know, people do things. So you need to have a comprehensive communication strategy to deal with such adverse circumstances arising out of the publication of the report. Finally, cabinet instructed that this report be published and directed so that the public is given the last opportunity to have a say. The Minister launched this report on the 14th of September 2007 in Pretoria and said there is a 60-day window period in which public will be requested to make comments on the report. This 60-day window period ends on the 14th of November. Hopefully, by then we will be getting written responses on the report. The department, together with that interdepartmental health team, will meet, will collate all the responses, categorize them, classify them, then consolidate the report, publish the report, and take it to cabinet with certain recommendations. Parallel to that process, the issue of amendments to the Deed Registry Act, as well as Regulation 18 of the Deed Registry Act, must go, because that's a clear instruction that the amendments, we can't wait the consolidation of the report, because the issue of disclosure is very clear what needs to be done. In a nutshell, this is what we have with the report of the panel of experts. It is now in the public domain, and we are hoping that this committee will digest the contents of the report and provide us with written comments so that we may amend the report where required. Those of you who have got the report, on page 3 of the report, it says that section 3 appendices, this section will be published separately from the main report. The appendices are not included here. Any one of you who needs the appendices, we can make them available to you by mail. You contact my sister who is here, and we will make those appendices available for your consumption. Thank you, Chef.
Thank you, Dr. Ivana. Of course, I have put my hands already. I'll take Honorable Dali, followed by Honorable Mel, followed by Honorable Panikel, Honorable Joseph, Honorable Abraham.
Anyway, thank you, and thanks for the presentation. My first few questions. The first question is on page 4, slide number 7, and slide number 8, under your synopsis, whatever you call it. If you raise the percentage of what is called so-called ownership, the issue that I would need you to talk to us here is relating to slide number 8 in particular, under bullet point number 2, where you raise individual foreign ownership services varies between big traditional assets. And the question is it a true reflection of the research that was done and of the situation as it stands now? Or it has come back. The reason I'm raising this here is in connection with what has been said in other presentations around the information from the DIS office. That the DIS office at that stage, I don't know whether now it's been rectified, but it was in a mess then. And that we could not allocate exactly who owned what. So on the basis of this, I need that to clarify what on this one. But do not assume that this is a true reflection on by that. In fact, this is what you refer to as the fronting here in page 10, firstly maybe the correction on your slide number 19, though there's an inconsistent in terms of your maybe the typing error or something. There's no test here, the test here.
Oh.
We don't know that here. I don't know, you see, I'll put them on that correction, that the key of government, the key of government. The second issue there, in terms of slide number 20, structure is returned by the provinces. I just want to check in terms of this particular slide. What's the role of cluster? Well, I'm assuming that the cluster of ministers, whatever, they are sometimes dealing with this issue as a cluster. I see here that they're thinking in terms of the other arrangements. Then I'll just have to check in terms of the role of cluster. In page 15, page 15 of your slide, slide number 29. This is what it means. This is seriously what it means. Here, and also I think that page 15 reads with also page 22 of your presentation. If you look at that, the bullet point number 2 on slide 29. So the current land use management bid is well placed among other things to achieve the recommended impression. Come on, guys. If you look at your bill as it stands now, I may never have that, but page 8 and page 9 of that bill, let me remember, was the draft out of this bill. Page 8 and page 9 talk about, firstly, that it was first published in 2001, and it was only presented to the cabinet in 2007, 6 years later. If you are saying to us this particular bullet point that is going to be addressed by this bill, if you must just tell us, But if you look at the bill as it's proposed now, the consultation process, you are still saying that in this deal itself, it is not even ready to come before us. Even this chair, you know? And then how are you going to deal with that situation? That is not very fair. Because this issue is a very critical issue. I'll come back later to the local government of this issue. It's very critical. And if you're talking about that bill that has been in process for about 7 years, in fact, it's gone for 8 years now, and it's not even come before us, and you're saying there's a better place in terms of this particular situation. So, okay. Page 16, around the local government. You see, I once raised this issue somewhere, that there is a process in terms of the land use around the local government. Because at this stage, the local government are selling land to private developers, left and right. And those private developers are doing nothing except getting rich almost every day. The other problem in terms of the local government too, you may find that these deals that are done by the local government, some of them are done for personal purposes, nothing else. Some of the council are getting kicked back out of the system of this land. If we are still talking about this particular land you see, which is not even before, I'm really wondering, what mechanism that I take from the department to deal with this particular situation? The leasehold that I'm talking about on slide number 82, we're talking about the 39 to 40 years. I just want to check, what is the view of the department around the moratorium on the land of it. I'm raising this issue on slide 27 on page 14 because everything says now, the process that you are hearing from your power, it's going to be a very, very long process, I'm telling you now. The wheels of government are very slow. They're moving very, very slowly. And if you don't have a moratorium on this land ownership, when you come to the end of this process that you have referred to, public comment for 60 days, back to the cabinet, come on, you know, you're not going to achieve anything. Otherwise, when this becomes a law, the land will be gone, and you can't return that land back at all. You're going to have a serious fight like this to try to retrieve that land that you will never achieve. Yeah, I just want to check that what is the process in place in terms of that particular issue on the moratorium. Maybe the last issue of the bottom last issue on page 17, slide number 34. We talk about funding. You know, this is a serious problem. Because this funding is not only in terms of the land related issue, it's in terms of the broad-based empowerment, this BE. There's a serious crisis in terms of the funding, in particular in the construction company. You know? Our people, they are poor, they end up being giving nice cars, nice houses, and they maybe do have a nice house and then a nice car, rather than owning the particular company or even owning the land for that matter. These are the issues that I think the department must carefully look at it. Lastly, page 18, that is slide number 36. If you look at page 18, slide number 36, the state social obligation. You know, sir, the right of everyone to have an adequate access to housing and other related issues. That's both in verse 9, number 35, verse number 36. I want to hear your comments in terms of this particular fight around the court bomb case. There was a constitutional court judgment of this particular issue, which was giving a direction to the government how to deal with some of these issues. It seems to us, when you get all these things, we just put the government and do something else. These are the issues that I think we need to deal with effectively. Thank you, Chairperson, for now, but this is the second part of the thank you.
Thank you, Chair. You know, if every time...
many questions. You know, if we are now the number that we have, we will not respond effectively. I think there are too many questions we have to be asked. I would rather go through them quickly, otherwise the response would not be meaningful.
No, they might be.
I'm not in the, there's so many already, there are so many questions.
Thank you, Chair. Yep. Listening to Dr. Sibanda always let me think about the caption with bright light, Big Brother Love Station. I cannot understand, Dr. Sibanda, please let us know. You said that the disclosure is already decided. And that is in spite of asking recommendations from the public up till the 14th of November. Is that right? I want to make some comments, Mr. Chair, on especially the re-racialization of land ownership. The reason stated is that it is for statistical purposes. Says who? You know, if Mr. Dali and Dr. Sibanda will be in power in this country, they will use this sort of statistics in other ways. And we cannot do this sort of thing. We cannot go back to the past. You know, in the past, apartheid also started with small and piecemeal changes. One of the things to say that changing Regulation 18 of the Deeds Registries Act means that a measure like giving your race on your title deed can be done without taking it to Parliament. Re-racialization by stealth and by decree. Is this acceptable? Property rights, Mr. Chairman, are the cornerstone of a free economy. And you don't have to take my word for it. Mr. Manuel, two weeks ago, said it in Parliament. If one creates uncertainty in tenure rights by tampering with the property rights, even if so little as Dr. Sibanda says, you're scared of people to invest. And a typical example, Zimbabwe, problems started when the certainty of the property rights was affected. Not only for the previous owner, but also for the present owners. And the consequence is the investment. No bank will lend money to a person when the collateral he offers is uncertain. 4 years ago, Mr. Joe and Mr. Tenzi announced a comprehensive audit of land ownership in our country. We agree with that. This can be done without re-racializing the whole system of title. We cannot go that way. It is incomprehensible to me why the rate of a foreign person would be significant in the ownership of land in South Africa, other than for a racist purpose. So to say that such a regulation would not affect foreign investment, then, sir, I think you should speak to your own people in the ministry and the treasury and hear what they say about that. I would later on, sir, Mr. Chairman, make a proposition that this committee decides to ask Parliament that this report be debated in Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Some of my questions have taken them, but I want to start by asking you We've been discussing. Okay. Now, on the moratorium issue, on page 14, Dr. you talk about the bylaws and the ordinance. And you just talk about the moratorium. So you are not talking about changing the bylaws and the ordinances altogether. Some of the ordinances, they said back as 1936. They are still being used now. How can you strengthen that? How can you change that? Because our people are suffering because of those bylaws and those ordinances. On 27, just a slide above that one, Udalev asked this question, the selling of land by councillors to foreigners. There's a case in Limpopo. Page 14, thank you. There's a case in Limpopo where there's mining carrying on without the knowledge of the people of that particular area. They haven't been consulted. What are we doing? I'm skeptic about the time that this particular act might take. I'm looking at the time that you're putting in place. It takes too long. I also want to go back to the issue that Udaya also raised, the planting issue. You know, you talked about people planting, sitting at home, being registered as directors. But you don't tell us that what penalties goes with that. I would suggest that the penalties could be put in place. If it goes to a push, even if it means asset forfeiture, that must happen, because really, 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 our people are being planting and they are being made poorer. You are planting, and at the end of the day, there are debts that remain to those people. The last one is on page 19. I had a few, but I'll stick to the three because some food I have asked them in a way. Please elaborate on this constitutional right that persons cannot be evicted from their home. You know, people are evicted in the order of court. In many cases, those orders are given without even having checked whether there's an alternative settlement place. Some are sent around in a very small piece of land. They can't go to the shop. They can't come out of that small piece of land. What are we doing in connection to that? Because that is also very, very serious. People are sent like animals. The demolishing of homes. I think we must take a drastic step on this. If you look at what is happening in the farm area, farm dwellers and farm workers who are treated like animals, more drastic steps need to be taken along. I think that for now, I'll end up there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just to make a brief comment initially, is that from our side, from the DA side, there are some points on this whole exercise that we support, because we have to look at the use of the land in our country. And there are a number of suggestions which I think we can go along with, and which I think are necessary: the planting, the land use in general, the use of municipal land and state land. I think it's important that we organize this and get that in place. But there are certain things which impact it,
will cause further problems, and that is what we are worried about. For instance, and my colleague here referred to the race component bringing it back. On what basis are we going to decide on race again? What norms are we going to do? Are we going to legislate on this? Who's going to control this? Can't we move away from the race base and look at the positive things, because race has got other connotations and has been for a long time one of the biggest problems in our country, and we're bringing back things which foreigners, what race do they belong to? And now we want to categorize them. What's an immigrant? This is a problem. So I've got problems with that, and I've got serious problems with that, with those aspects of it. And then, but we can continue later, but then there's another two points which I'd like to make. In terms of the use of land by foreigners in South Africa, was there a study made, a case study or two, as to the beneficial effects of that investment in South Africa for our economy? Because I can, in agriculture, I can point out many farms that were taken over by foreigners, which were absolutely on the point of being bankrupt. Money was spent, invested from outside. All of a sudden, a whole training system and a whole new investment came. New houses were built. So, yes, foreigners have the beneficial effect for this with capital from outside, and in a sense, doing things which we couldn't have done at that stage. I think we shouldn't overlook the beneficial effect of foreign capital invested in South Africa in for the benefit of the people there. And then, just on the page 5, that statistic, it's difficult for me to understand that. 4%, let me get this straight. The size is 4%. The count is 4.67% of the area in South Africa. And that their value is 63% of all the houses in South Africa. Sorry, my statistics is a bit, that's probably outdated, but I can't understand this. Thank you, I'll stop with that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've got three short questions. On page 5 of the presentation, Dr. Bondo referred to the overall situation on farmland as being 27% corporate owned. Also, there the size of the CDC and the value is 28%. Now, read together with page 7 of your report. And I'll read it to you because we're not actually speaking. The size and value of foreign ownership will certainly be higher once the process of analyzing information regarding corporations, trusts, and 21 companies is completed. Right? Although it is stated that it's uncertain what the situation is, there is certain that there is no doubt in the minds of the panel of experts, that this will increase the percentage of foreign aid. Now, I wonder if the panel of experts took any trouble to analyze what they regard as corporate owned. You know, for many, many years, any sizable South African farm owned by commercial from farmer would have been registered in a Southern Valley Company name, or a CC name, or a trust for that matter. But to regard that as corporations, you know, that would be foreign-owned corporations farming in South Africa. You know, the biggest corporation ever tried to farm in South Africa was Anglo-American, and they nearly went bankrupt. Certainly the whole farming operation went bankrupt. And they disclosed it, of course, because they learned a very, very serious lesson. And that is that farming worldwide is done by individuals, not by corporations, or by governments for that matter. Any government that tried to farm in the history of the world has bankrupted that country and forced famine. The farming is done by individuals. And these corporations that the panel of experts refer to, the panel of experts, they go back and examine. Although they themselves say that they're not They're uncertain of what it represents. The I, however, absolutely certain it will increase the foreign ownership. I want to make a very, very certain statement to the panel that they are wrong. That they will find that there's a decrease the percentage of foreign ownership once they've examined the corporation. And I strongly recommend them to do that so as not to have a foolish report. That is the first point. I'd like to know how they came to this conclusion. The question is how they came to the conclusion that it would increase the foreign component when clearly they haven't examined what each corporation represents. Then on page 8, we get to the point where we refer to compulsory. It's recommended by the panel of experts that compulsory disclosure of nationality, race, gender, and other information. Now, I've got in front of me here two documents, two South African documents. And one is a driver's license of Dr. Minicap, which is very nice to know that he has a driver's license. And the other is the ISO book of Mr. Dicatello. And in neither of these documents is the race of a South African disclosed. Now, my colleague Dr. Minicap already referred to the issue. But my question is more direct. Since this panel of experts are making these recommendations and compulsory race announcement or whatever, are they suggesting that, are they recommending to cabinet and to the South African people that we have a race classification act and that we should go back to the old pencil test again? That a pencil should be pushed in my head, going to Mr. DiCicero's head to determine which race we are? This compulsory. I'm going to say it's very important. You say it's compulsory. If it's compulsory, you will compel me. Otherwise, presumably, you will refuse to register land in my name if I don't give my race. How must I give my race? You don't know what my race is. If I'm uncertain about my race, must I apply to the panel of experts to determine what my race is and on what grounds are they going to do it? Will they recommend an act? We want a direct question whether they will recommend an act like we have the old act, the Race Classification Act. And if they don't recommend that, I want to know how on earth they intend this recommendation of these to carry out. It's ludicrous. They're lousy. And I find this actually very disturbing. If you go to the, just not your book, but I recommend you look at the South African Yearbook of 2006-2007. On page 98, let me say to you, there are three headings here of consequence. The one is land reform systems and support services. The other is the Commission on the Restitution of Land Rights. And the last one is foreign land ownership. Now, it's to me very, very disturbing what the sense of the government is. When land reform systems and support services have less than half a quorum. Less than half a quorum dedicated in this book that reflects South Africa to the world to land reform. Less than half a quorum is dedicated to the restitution issue, which is one of the biggest issues in the history of our country. But 2.5 quorums is dedicated to this ludicrous story about foreign ownership, where in your report yourself you say it's below 3%. Absolutely of no consequence whatsoever. But 30% of this country's farmland we want by 2014 to be transferred to Black South Africans. That gets half a quorum in our book. The 3% issue, we think, we're not even certain of it, gets 2.5 quorum in the year. Can you try and address that? It's not a question you have to answer now, sir. But can you try and address that? And when you speak to Joe, make your next recommendation as a panel of experts. Trying to determine from the government what the mentality is that reach these important issues in this understandable manner. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to thank Dr. Kibanda for the presentation. But I also need to say that we are now trying to close the stable door after the horse is bolted. If you take, for example, well, there were calls from this committee over a long period of time where we felt that the extent of land, especially housing land, that was bought up in the most prime areas of our country was increasing, and that access to such land by ordinary South Africans was becoming extremely difficult. One expected a greater emphasis on creating opportunities for ordinary South Africans, not high-income earners, to be able to access reasonably prime land, which was very short after when it came to foreigners. Of course, we also complained about the fact that there were certain estate agents who were concentrating on foreign buyers, and in that way, helping to push up prices. If you look at prices today, Jefferson, particularly in the coastal areas of our country, other prime locations in the country, you will find that it is well nigh impossible for any average South African to purchase a property there. And in spite of the interest rate, well, you have the interest rate hikes, 350 basis points since June last year, it does not impact on the foreign buyer, because the foreign buyer comes here with his dollars or euros or pounds, and you know the conversion rate, and at the end of the day, he or she could basically buy a home or a sectional title unit or a cluster in our country with their pocket money, with the pocket change that they have. Now, Jefferson, I want to address a few issues that have been referred to here. I think we as South Africans and our parliament must be extremely careful. If we want to legislate into our laws certain terms, which in the past have been the very reason and basis for severe conflict in our country. I would not like to go back to the days when, because I was classified by the government of them days as a so-called Indian, never been to India, never born in India, born and bred in South Africa, speaking the languages of my country, swear loyalty to this Mother Earth that has sustained me, and I was called an Indian. Now, because I was an Indian, I could not enter certain doors. For example, I went once into a post office. I went into the wrong thing. And I was told by the lady behind the counter, I wonder whether she had 7 6, Ja, ab. Wat soek jy hier? So I said, mevrou, ek is na die Bobbejaan kom kyk wat achter die toonbank staan. These are the sort of things that we've been through. Now, if we want to put race into legislation, I want to contend that we are also in conflict with our constitution. If we want to address foreign land ownership, then I believe that what we need to do is talk about nationality. I'm a national of South Africa. Whether you are a French national of Indian descent or Turkish descent or whatever, you are a French. And so are you an American, whether you are an Afro-American or pink or yellow, you are an American. And they're all, to me, they're all foreigners. And I say that all of them, there should be limitations on the purchase of land in our country. And there must also be distinctions. If any overseas investor is coming into our country and is going to set up an enterprise which is going to bring add value to our country in terms of employment, helping to promote the GDP, then of course such people, I believe, should be welcome. But I also make this distinction there. That if you take, when I say we are trying to bolt the stable door when the horse is bolted, when you take the entire African continent, ghost, the entire African coast. It is said that the V&A waterfront is the most prime of prime properties. Who was its owner? The South African government through one of its entities. So what did we do? We went along and we sold it for a paltry 7 billion rand to an Arab English consortium. In what way are we contributing towards the empowerment of ordinary South Africans? And the moment the deal was signed and sealed, the reports we got from those buyers was that they bought a bargain. The property was worth 12 billion. Now what was wrong in us as South Africans? They're floating a company, not 7 billion shares, but 14 billion shares, as a rand a share. And even tell that Tata on the farm, who was an ordinary laborer, who today earns a little pension, that Tata, you can have 1,000 shares, and you shall pay off at 50 rand a month. That is the sort of thing that we expect should come from our government. If we want to empower truly our people and limit foreign ownership and purchase of some of our primest of prime properties. That is gone, Chair. You will never see the V&A waterfront ever becoming South African homes again. Forget it. Now, Chair, I feel that we need to limit and we need to control particularly the residential market as well as the agricultural land in our country and certain enterprises where people merely buy, for argument's sake, the properties and then rent them out to South Africans. Those things need to be controlled. But please, in God's name, I would not like to see any of our legislation again having the word in there, black, pink, yellow, Indian in my case. I think that would be really turning the clock back. We would be going into the dark ages from which we have paid a heavy price to escape. Furthermore, Chair, if you start racially categorizing people, because you will need legislation to do that, you are actually going to build in a complex into our children. Today, children, irrespective of what their backgrounds are finding themselves commonly as the children of South Africa. And they are all our children. If a single or one of them gets hurt, if you hear of a child drowned somewhere or killed by somebody, you feel it's part of you that is gone. And that's the sort of spirit that we need to engender if we really want to live up to the sacrifices that were made by our leaders in this country in the past. Chair, one of my favorite questions is, what will the cost be of the implementation of all these measures that we are thinking of, that we are planning? Furthermore, Chair, I've made a little note here, which troubles. You have a South African, well, I'll mention one of my NEC members, Tokyo Tekwari. You know to whom he is there. Now, does this mean that if they are going to jointly buy a property, the title deed will have to say, Tokyo Tekwari, well, his name is Gabriel, by the way, Black, and then his wife's name alongside, because it's a joint property ownership that they're going in for? White. Please, stay out of that thing. I don't want us to go back to that. We should work on nationality. A South African is a South African. That is a plan. Yes, we've had a lot of land that has been bought up by overseas people and turned into game farms. While some may argue that it has added value in the sense that they create employment, on the other hand, it is a withdrawal of agricultural land in many instances. at the expense of our people, at the expense of the food security of our country. Because not everybody in South Africa would readily eat game meat, but all of us would eat meat in its various diversified forms. We need to look at that. Then, sir, yes, I think at this stage, sir, I've been a bit emotional. I have said what I needed to say. But what I do lament, sir, is that we, instead of looking at ways and means of giving access to more of our own people to prime property in the country, we are looking at other means of even penalizing our own people. And in this report, I see signs thereof. We need to get, you spoke here about the ministerial committee of five different portfolios. Let us face things. You also refer here to the fact that certain committees are not functioning at the provincial level. These are the sort of nitty-gritties that we need to put in place first. Because unless you can put those things in place, I'm afraid the implementation of any measure that you want to bring about, apart from creating heartache and havoc by the race factor, we would be achieving pressure. We should look at it very seriously and not rush into this. Because in my language, they say that if you want to kill the snake, see that you don't in the process break the stick. Now what we are doing here is in trying to kill the snake, we are going to get rid of the stick and you have nothing to kill the snake with. So please, sir, this needs much more thinking than rushing into certain things. But we will regret what we are doing if we don't do this properly. And I reiterate, Chair, I am totally in favor of the limitation to be placed on foreign land ownership, and I am totally in favor of seeing to it that fellow South Africans, especially those at the lower rung of the economic ladder, have access to prime and primer properties to which they don't have today. And I agree with Mr. Lally that by the time you implement these things, whatever you are trying to achieve will be far more difficult to achieve, because just as the VNA has been sold, so will other prominent properties in the country go, and you'll never ever get it back, and the children and the future generations of this country will be losing to no one else. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, Chair. Secondly, what is dealing with today is talking about the foreign ownership. One can hear that the debate is becoming so expensive because of the purchasing of land. Land is our property. And we've got to take care of it. We've got to be accountable of it. We need not just open and not close. We must know who comes into South Africa, and we should also know who goes out. And we must know that individual comes into South Africa, for how long is he or she going to stay, and what is happening with other countries. So we must definitely know, we must definitely have those facts in our mind. We're not saying we're discriminating against ourselves. We know how diverse South Africa is. But let us not open up, you know, an ending. Chairperson, my second question, let me thank Dr. Spider for the information that he presented before us. You mentioned that a period of 3 months was given for data to be collected, and of which the period was not enough. And then that now there's the question of ensuring that miracles that are being made. What if that period of collecting data is extended enough? Because one doubts as to whether the question of disclosure might be fruitful. If, let's say, we extend maybe by a year and we ensure that we get all this information, we will not be at the end of the day being able to say our land that is being owned by foreigners is actually 3% or more and not say that was my first question. And then my second question is, I think Honorable Nali, some of the questions through osmosis, but there is this question of 39 years, which you mentioned. One would like to know this exact time frame, when does it start, and when is the 39 years going to be ending, when we'll be saying we now have that piece of land set, we now have maybe that piece of land taken for on one we'd like to do this. And then on the question of the moratorium, based on what I said earlier on, that's my introductory remarks, the moratorium on 2 years, to me, as South African, I find it to be very what if we look into this period and if possible we extend it so that we do our homework at the end of the day, we are able to see what this property is for South Africans and then this one thing that we need to other people. And then lastly, Comrade, this question of branching. We are aware that there are some side effects with regards to branching. For instance, let me say the question of skills. You got this tender but not even a single skill. So the government, in awarding this tender, what do you do to Mount Buna to ensure that enough to be able to run that tender without requesting someone to play a front of us?
That's a potash, yes. Yeah. I thought it was now. I'm putting on standing here now.
This one is a bit of
thank you very much. I think really we come here as a department not to tell you things, just report, and I think the wisdom is here. I'm beginning to see it. Yeah. I appreciate all the comments that you have made, and all your comments, I think my colleagues are collating them. They will be useful in us consolidating the report. That is why the minister said we must consult with you. We are part of the stakeholder, which is very important. Without your wisdom as politicians, as a technocrats, we can go the wrong direction. And I will not respond to the questions in the order they came. I've been making notes. I've gone through my notes. I think there has been a lot of talk around race. The recommendation on disclosure does not focus only on race. Race is one factor among other variables to be looked into. And that's one thing. Secondly, we must look at the purpose for which race is being put into play. And this is not unique to us here. In America, programs of transformation, apart from
American, calling themselves American. They are a certain program which enjoin the American state to know what is happening to the Hispanics, what is happening to the American Jews, what is happening to the Italian Americans, what is happening to other vulnerable groups. If the proposal by the panel of experts must be located not in our past, but into the purpose for which race as one of the many variables is being put into play. The purpose for this work of the panel is to determine, to help the government at the end of the day, to say, from a racial perspective, how have we fared coming from that racially divided past? Have we managed to bring equity to balance across racial categories? And then, it's not only race that is being brought into the picture. It is also the issue of gender, men and women. Women being one of the most vulnerable groups in our society. The state needs to measure the extent of transformation. How else would the state know how women have fared from the transformation program that is put in place, if that variable is not one of those put to determine the extent of transformation that is the second question we have? The state would not know. Similarly, if we take the justification that is the framework for which race is put, it is to measure how we have transformed our lens dispensation over a period of time. For example, just to give you an example, the minister was going to give a speech on women and access to land. Theoretically, I could come up with a sense of policy. I know what policy says. But practically, because of the way we have collected data, we have not disaggregated data into various chunks that would enable us to analyze the extent of transformation in terms of land between men and women. How many women own land in their own right today? It's not clear because of the way we have captured our data. It's not clear. But if we put it in our system and use it as a variable, as a measure of transformation, it must be seen in this light. Not, this is not only being proposed for South Africa. It is happening right now in America. The program that was put by Lyndon Johnson in 1964 has that racial element to say, focus on Black Americans, Afro-Americans, on Hispanics. If America did not do that, they would not know how these other racial groups, which are not dominant in the American society, are failing, is targeting certain people for the transformation purposes. I think we should look at this thing not with the eyes of the past, but with the eyes that say, what is the purpose for us doing this? We have transcended those racial stereotypes in South Africa. We have, otherwise we would not be here. We managed to transcend. We want to build a non-racial society. But it does not mean that we must not look in terms of our aspect of, you know, must not look in terms of race. Race for purposes of measuring our transformation purposes. That's the purpose. But I take note of the argument put. This report is not definitive. That is why, having it said, go back and consult. We will take views from wide cross-section of people, and then we will present all these views to cabinet, and cabinet in its wisdom, being the representative of the people, will give us direction in terms of ultimately what are the variables that we need to put in, what variables that we need to check out of this report. As I'm saying, it's not definitely, but I want to see if the way the Adam person saw in terms of purpose for which race is being used as one of the variables for this state to measure the extent of transformation across time. I live in the States. I know that from a national perspective, Americans will call themselves Americans. But there are certain times when they will call themselves Afro-Americans, Hispanics, Jewish-Americans, Italian-Americans. That terminology is secondary to your larger identification, which is being American. I accept the proposal that we need to limit the disposal of land ownership insofar as it relates to residential and agricultural land, to put certain limits as to who that land is disposed to, and certain enterprises. But I think it's a well accepted, you know, proposal. On the issue of the statistics, whether that is a truly reflection of that is coming out of the research or of the situation or is a thumbtack, I would say that the report was based on the information that was got from CICO data, data that we get from GPI, of companies registered. Your city, that is very easy. It's easy to determine who is who in the zoo there. So I would say that for residential and title properties, it's a true reflection. Yes, I accept that the deed registry system has been problematic for some time. Since, I think, 2002 or so, it was noted that, you know, it records are not up to date, but the department is cleaning up, you know, the data there and employing more people to take care of the system so that the system reflects the reality of the situation. It has not, the last transformation has not been completely achieved, but we have started the process of cleaning up the deed system. Disclosure on the issue of yes, the panel prospect is very definitive insofar as insofar as juristic individual, foreign person is concerned. The range varying from 1% to 3% is very clear there. What is unclear is the corporate ownership dealing with your company, your trust, and so forth and so forth. Although they come to the conclusion that when the final research has been concluded, foreign ownership, taking into account individual juristic persons, and then corporate ownership, it could be higher. That is not also a definitive, it's a hypothesis, which was to be verified by the research process. But that research process, because they were given, the consultants were given a limited time, could not definitively conclude that corporate ownership in South Africa is so much. The consultants experienced a number of problems. They presented a report which the panel of experts had shut down. They said, your report don't follow the terms of reference, blah, 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 blah. But then, in justifying their work, the consultants have said, we have been given only a short period of time. We would have had a different picture if we were allowed more time to do this work. But the panel is saying, the land is in lay. We can access this information on corporate ownership when we finally have come up with legislative measure dealing with disclosure. Because that information, that disclosure clause is retrospective. It's past, present, and future cycles. And over time, we will be enabled to know who owns what in South Africa. That was therefore a great position, given the problem experienced in getting data around corporate ownership. Someone says, have we looked into the benefits that arise from foreign investment? I think the panel of experts did. They don't deny that both local and foreign investment contribute towards the development of this country in terms of wealth creation, employment generation, and so forth and so forth. They don't deny that. I think what they are saying is there must be a balancing act. You must balance the benefits that accrue from foreign direct investment and maintenance of motherland. Can you imagine what the situation can be if we have uncontrolled land disposal in South Africa? If on the other day the whole of Western Cape has been bought by French nationals, how would we feel? We've thrown away national patrimony. Why did we struggle for all these years to maintain, to keep national patrimony? I think it's a question of balancing acts. We need to balance the need to preserve national patrimony and the benefits that accrue from investment outside. Actually, the research has shown that putting such controls in other countries has not driven away foreign direct investment. On the contrary, countries that have such policies have attracted foreign direct investment, whether you're talking of Asiatic or Australasia, Australasian countries, or Latin American countries, or America for that matter. I think the challenge is, what Kenya form do you put in place that will enable you to maintain national patrimony over your land and at the same time attract foreigners to invest on your land? As the panel experts are saying, leasehold is such a Kenya form that would enable you to keep your land and at the same time attract foreign direct investment. Because if you give them a longer enough period, foreigners will come and invest in this country. If you have a resource, you can go to a bank on the basis of that default and get collateral. It is happening in England, for example. Most of the land is held in terms of people. So, I think for me the challenge is in coming up with that balancing act. The fact that if we succeed at the end of the day to regulate ownership of land by foreigners, as proposed here, there's no evidence, judging from the experience of other countries, that that would throw away foreign direct investment. What would be wrong is when we come up with a regime that does not ignore the property rights. Someone talked about the property system. This property system, certainly this proposal here, do not cast doubt on the integrity of the deed registration system in South Africa. No way. And the proposal here do not threaten the system of property rights as protected by Section 25 of the Constitution. No way. All the proposals are saying there is a sector of foreign ownership of land which needs to be monitored and limited so that we do not overnight lose the entire country to America and become servants of America. Because if the America owns this land in Mexico, what will be our situation on the land? What will be our situation on the land? So I think we must make it clear that the proposals do not threaten the private property system that we have in South Africa. On the contrary, they strengthen the system. There's no challenge to that system. That's not seeing that we are going that way. We have not tinkered with the property system. Section 25 of the Constitution remains sacrosanct. Unless by the wing of all South Africans, people want to gain it. Thank you. I take note that I should not use, I should amend my slide, not use it here, but here. And then someone also asked, what is the role of clusters? When the report was presented to the minister instructed that we must bring our sister departments into the picture. And our sister departments are represented in the social and economic clusters. The report went through the social and economic clusters. Yesterday, which is represented by the DG, Director General, yesterday when I was in the plane, I said to a lady who I recognized, you know, from the day we presented the report to Cabinet. And she said, your department has not presented three items to us, report, progress report. She said, I need a report for September for the social cluster. William Zeller, William Barr is you. Well, what is the status of that? I need a report on foreign ownership of land. What has happened in the cabinet situation? I need a report on land. What has happened? Then I sat down because you think land machine. I wrote down faculty progress on she's reporting today. Here, I think 7 minutes of a meeting. She said you know, she wants to report on that. In a nutshell, the clusters are critical in also vetting the products that come from their department. They are a sounding board like yourselves for various products that the various departments produce. We've gone through them. The willing seller, willing buyer are emitting the clusters on the 7th of November. They are critical, otherwise cabinet will not accept any report that goes to it that is not in tables in the social and economic clusters. On the issue of limited moratorium and the selling of land, insofar as state land is concerned, any disposal of land today, in the absence of this report, is subject to ministerial approval. Any disposal of state land. If the minister approves, fine. If the minister does not approve, it does not go. Already there are procedures in place currently, in the absence of this report, that empower the minister to make certain approval, reject or approve disposal of certain categories of state land. And around the issues of mining, again, if you look at the mineral energy legislation, there's a certain procedure that is to be followed, a process. Communities need to be engaged so that their consent on certain things is obtained. And the concurrence from the Department of Health Affairs need to be obtained before finalization of that application to do XYZ. So there is this current procedure to deal with some of these issues. if they are violating of those procedures and processes, they need to be brought to the attention of the Department of Labor Affairs and Minerals and Energy for the two departments to deal with those violations. I take note of the fact and the proposal that the 2-year moratorium may not be sufficient, too short. It could be extended. We take note of that. And then there's nothing else that said this. The point is not cutting short. That's why we are consulting with you, so that whatever amendment needs to be made on the report, your input will go a long way towards improving the quality of this report. There was also a question saying there exists a number of bylaws. This was in reference to slide 28. 1936, that are still in place. Until LAMB has been promulgated, some of these laws will continue. LAMB is the Land Use Management Bill. And I am sorry, brother. Land is Land Use Management Bill. So, you know, when I got into government, there were these acronyms. I hate them. I'm sorry to use them. Because it means we're not communicating with each other. Until the Land Use Management Bill has been put through the system and been made into law, the rationalization of legislation that is being proposed here in terms of the bill is not going to take place. I accept that it has taken too long. The minister is very angry with us, with the department. 2 weeks back, I was present at the minister's meeting with the DG on 2 Mondays back. She said, it means this year we are not taking any bills to parliament. Yes. Lamb and the Surveying Profession Bill have been delayed. They should have been with Parliament by July 15th. July has gone. But there were certain concerns Cabinet raised in June. And then the minister's meeting raised, the deputy minister raised 17 concerns with the bill. And my legal specialist, who actually is responsible for drafting, raised certain issues. We have been, since June, trying to address these concerns. We, and LAMB, Land Use Management Bill and Surveying Profession Bill, were prioritized over other bills. And said, we put these others, let us focus on these two bills. Colin Broca is the only one who is the drafter currently. And the Minister of Finance went out of his way to say, I will second a lady who is involved in drafting to help speed up the process. The lady said, I'm given 2 weeks to produce this. I am not going to accept this responsibility and compromise my professional integrity. 2 weeks is not sufficient time. To give you an example, send no advisor. To do technical work on bills submitted for certification, it needs 5 weeks. So the 2 weeks which we required this lady to engage with in order to clean up the quality of the bill, she said, no way, I'm not willing. So a number of people have been saying, why have you not outsourced the work? Why do you depend on calling? We're saying, people who can do it, who are willing to do it, are not willing to take on the job for a short time because they are compromising their integrity. If they come up with a short job, it means that you will not have faith in them. So that has been the dilemma. And as it is now, the minister is saying, beef up the Policy and Legislation Development Unit. We are doing that. It was the period that has been problematic. And even now, we have missed the date. We are now shifting these two bills into the 2008-2009 legislative program. There is the SARA regulations also. Only one person has to do this. Currently, Colin Broca is working on the SARA regulations. the minister needs to declare our license ready on Monday. The timelines that we gave you have gone, come and gone. Only one person was legally qualified to go to do both jobs. So we hope that the comments, we have satisfied ourselves that the concerns of cabinet have been addressed. And as such, when we introduce the bill, it will be smooth sailing. And hopefully it will be promulgated levies management next year. And then one of the functions of this bill is to what is the right word for dealing with past archaic legislation? Repeat, yes. One of the functions of land use management bill is to repeal some of the ordinances that we are talking about here and rationalize a plethora of legislation that currently exists dealing with the same. There's too many of them. So land use management bill, when it becomes an act, will provide the norm, standard. By the end of next year, hopefully, if it doesn't fit a lot of time here, we will have the act. I regret, I share your concern that it has taken 8 years. It's a set of concerns. Yes.
But also, do you accept the fact that the explanation that you've given is found in that? In terms of the delay of the lamps not coming to the
Yes, actually, I'm saying yes, it's not sound enough. I think it has to do with our own internal departmental politics, which the DG is addressing. The minister, in the last 2 MINCOMs, said, made it clear to the policy and legislation unit, as well as the LPR, the Land and Information Branch, who are the drivers of the piece of legislation. The minister was very upset. He's angry with the department. But we are unable this year to have tabled any bill. And then said that the DG must deal with the administrative problem relating to why we did not meet the target. So the DG is dealing with it. Yesterday we were discussing it. One of the factors, amongst others, is the capacity problem.
I want to plead with you that you need to speak to this after the entitled your bank lift up your folks and work harder. Yes. You know, as I'm talking to you now, because of the bylaws, the compound law that we have, people are losing their credit. People are losing their votes. The only thing that they have to live on, they are losing that. Very, very poor people. If 10 heads have been taken and impounded, they are supposed to pay above 10,000 for that, and they don't have that. And that little thing that they have is gone. So we are pleading with you to say our people are suffering.
Yes, I want to know, let's have to follow our comments.
Let me write a few of them right there. And local, yes, while somebody alluded to the problem, local government selling land, and in many cases this is for personal purposes. The importance of one of the recommendations here is that the 3 tiers of government must be bound by these recommendations, that municipal land is public land. And the selling, the disposal of that land must be subject to the current proposal, sale and disposal processes. And other people have said we must have a meeting with SAGA to bring this to SAGA's attention so that from SAGA an instruction goes down. And that, secondly, that municipalities must also be represented in the stadium before the committee, so that all the three tiers of government are bound by the same rules. Yes. On planting, I couldn't agree more with what the sentiment coming from here. What the other members are proposing is that any violation of any law must be subject to a particular sanction. They propose, amongst others, asset forfeiture as penalty. Already we know that there are procedures, laws dealing with such violations. If, for example, I'm a drug lord and I am involved in illicit selling of drugs, the IFS forfeiture unit, if all the facts prove that I'm such a person, can bring me to book. Already the mechanism is existing. Beyond asset forfeiture, maybe what we would request from yourself, beyond asset forfeiture, what other sanctions do we need to bring to bear on the issue of funding, so that we have a battery of weapons that we could use to deal with this phenomenon? The Hotboom case, I think the state declared there that the state has a constitutional duty to address the rights of people who were the victims in this case. What has transpired since the Hotboom case, I do not know, but I will investigate and provide information to this committee as to what the state has done to give effect to that judgment. I don't have the facts right now. The issue of evictions. Yes, they occur on a daily basis. Especially, there are two types of evictions. There are legal evictions where the farm owner or the land owner follows due process in terms of law. Give notice to the evictee, as well as give notice to the Department of Land Affairs, the municipality, and the Department of Housing. That's a legal eviction. An illegal eviction is one that occurs where the land owner does not follow due process as prescribed by law. And we are currently, there are certain programs that we are currently putting in place. Firstly, the Department of Land Affairs, the Rural Legal Trust and Justice, put in place a fund for legal representation for people in similar circumstances. You will know previously that there was the legal aid board, which had been problems, but now we put in place a mechanism. Tripartite relationship is built on the Department of Land Affairs, Rural Legal Trust, and Justice. Money is available. Department of Justice provides the legal the lawyers to represent these people. Department of Land Affairs trained, and the institutional mechanism is the Rural Legal Trust. Secondly, the branch land and tenure reform is putting in place a land rights management facility. Which facility is going to be responsible for monitoring the ongoing legal and illegal evictions in the country and recommending collective action to be taken? As I speak right now, the minister instructed that there should be a campaign, that's another process. An educational campaign aimed towards the landowners, Deepan Dwellers, Department of Justice, your magistrate, your prosecutor and so forth, the police, safety and security. You conscientize these people about the lives of people and about processes that need to be followed if an eviction is to occur. There's going to be a 3-month publicity campaign, and my challenge to my colleagues has been that it should not be 3 months and then end there. It should be sustained so that, because education, changing the mindset, is a function of time and not just an event. It should be an ongoing thing so that the key, the farm dweller, knows what to do, knows that government is prepared to come to his or her aid if evicted, will provide legal representation, and so forth and so forth. The Justice Department, the magistrate, the prosecutor, need to know the law. As it is now, there is a flagrant violation of farm dwellers' rights, either out of ignorance of the law from the state agents' part, or other reasons. But the department is certainly putting in place certain measures to deal with the sector of illegal eviction. I think here I have gone through the comments that I have been able to.
Okay.
The marathon race.
You know, I think this question of race is one of the elements of justification. I think that it's probably time for us, but it also is the data that our department on the Ukraine amendment issue and the but you see, I think just to caution members, I say, you know, Ella, if you sit here listening to you're talking, I think we can make some fundamental mistakes instead of assisting ourselves to build, you know, a non-racial and democratic society. End up in the context of raising this question of race in two genders. And I think one of those is that people could be understood to be, you know, perpetuating the privileges of the past, but actually killing the protection on race. But also, opposition to that, you know, can also arise from the point of view of reminding us of the past that, you know, opening up the world. But I think also the argument to that as well could include another negative tendency about it, is that it could be understood as racism. And I think as a country, we have succeeded to some kind of a pragmatic, you know, approach in relation to how to respond to the challenges of the past. Looking at the past, not for purposes of inspiration, but actually to correct the injustice of the past. So, I'm saying, members, in the manner in which we address this question, let's take note of the fact that the Parliament has met significant pride in terms of making sure that this question of race is approached quite clearly without colonization. I mean, this Parliament has passed several bills which make reference to this element of race. We talk about the broad-based destiny of you talk about the differential procurement framework policy act in this parliament. You talk about parliament equity. So I'm saying this parliament, I think, is
able to respond to the activities of the process. So, in the manner in which we look at the issue, let's look at the purpose for which the question is intended. So, for that note, I would ask that when we do follow-up questions, that sort of intervention I'll take those that have not asked questions.
Yeah, thank you, sir. You have actually stolen some of my words. Like that one, let me remind this committee that it is this committee that instituted this proceeding that led to this report. Even during the time of Minister Derek Anekom, as this committee was concerned about two facts. One, the fact that we were aware that there was land, South African land that was owned by foreigners, and we didn't know to what extent was such land in the hands of foreigners. And we're also concerned that this ownership of land by foreigners does seem to have an impact on the prices of land, especially when it came to land reform. And it also had the potential of interfering with land redistribution, as I say, through the fact that the foreigners have more money than South Africans in the government might have in order to ensure that land that is used for land reform is available. We were also concerned about the fact that while we know that 13% of the land was allocated by whites to blacks, we didn't know the extent of the land that was owned by whites, either as individuals, I mean privately, be they in the form of corporates or individuals. And we knew that it was not going to help us in redistributing land to the extent that South Africans owned it on an equitable basis if we do not know who, in terms of the land register owns the land in terms of it. And as you have said, we have affirmative action, economic empowerment. Even when we entertain the calls of the department, we always ask how many Indians are employed in that department and in what positions, how many colors, how many Africans, how many whites. It's not anything new, this question of race, because in order for us to reach our destination of non-racialism, we have to travel through that path that is shown with this cross problem of racism and gender. Well, for gender is not really a problem, but race, of course, is a problem because there are people. For instance, I myself would be uncomfortable if I was one of the beneficiaries of the situation, the policies of racism of the past, that now suddenly we are going to be required to talk about race and things like that. Because some of these benefits, that are enjoyed by some of our fellow citizens, they are enjoying them at the expense of the other races in the country. So it's something I agree with you that you have to tread carefully on, but at the same time you cannot avoid it. It's imperative. So I think as this committee, we should be in a position at some stage to address our appreciation to the work that has been done by this panel and to ask the government, department, minister, to go ahead and do this kind of work so that we are fully informed as to the ownership situation of land in South Africa. This question of land ownership by foreigners, you tend to say foreign land, this is not foreign land, this is land, South African land that is owned by foreigners. It is part and parcel of the land reform program. And our land reform program has to touch of necessity on the question of land. Because, what I just said is that 13% of the land was allocated to Black race, while the rest was allocated to the state as well as the Tigray, and that imbalance has been addressed. I'm talking about this.
Yes, thank you. We are dealing here with a very, very sensitive and emotive subject, man. And we cannot avoid being highly emotional when the debate taking the form that it has taken. Because in considering this land issue, we do this for the exercise of the benefits of the people that we represent. And we've got to equip ourselves with factual information in order to go back to the people and indicate to them the present state of affairs with regard to land. One would ask Dr. Sibanda a very simple question which he may regard as too simple perhaps to answer. And the question would be, how worried and representative was the survey conducted? Why the hearing could involve only structures or sectors that are known to the very consultants. But those very people that I'm talking about there, how were they represented, or they represented in this particular instance? In addressing land ownership, we are considering those who were previously disadvantaged. That will remain a fact. Now one will ask, at what speed are we traveling? We perhaps the commissioner in aiding, in facilitating the repossession of land or redistribution of land to those very people. Because I do know for a fact that there are those people who have been in the queue for more than 13 years, for as long as the Democratic Republic has been in existence. And five examples when the time does arrive. But I'm just saying we should consider all these things, the reporting and some of these issues, like members have challenged, have got to be factual, because we being regarded as honorable people have got to go back to the people with practical and factual data of the development. I'm asking the speed that which we are searching in order to redistribute the very land that we shall have got, whether from foreigners, whether as a result of buying farms from other farmers. I am particularly concerned in the area where this business service is perhaps non-existent. Thank you.
Yes, but what I would do, I would
also ask my question, because I never asked the same question.
This one, after I
was telling you a follow-up question. Maybe the telephone was you, I didn't say it. Why you don't
mess me? Yes. Now, this issue about the first reason, let me start from the same thing. If you look at things, for example, the report, the reference of the report of the site,
Since flat number 4 is 5, the second flat 5 says that terminal denial is supported by the recommendations and approved by the report. The final analysis before leaving to the public comment. Now, you are calling now for public comment. My question is, already some of the recommendations that I've made to the government. So I wanted to find out the issue of the moratorium. When is it kicking in? Part of, one of the things that were already the consideration of mentioning the recommendation. Also waiting for the public consent. But the second element to this issue of moratorium is that I'm a little curious that this moratorium applies conservation to the land that is in the state. What about the land that is in the private hands? And in fact, the last explanation is that would be going against property rights as the eye of the constitution. And I think it's a matter of law perspective. Because the clause in the property clause protects both the progressive rights, but also the progressive in the sense that the current and future rights of property rights must be guaranteed. So therefore I think that the approach that is taken here doesn't help the because it's not rent in the private hand. And if they can dispense of it to anybody, what then does that mean in terms of, the percentage that we're talking about in terms of foreign ownership of the African land. So I'm saying that concretely that I think this moratorium must equally apply to the land that is in private hands. If it is supposed to be disposed for enough, let government have the first right, of the citizen or to buy before it could go to the foreign party. About that, the issue of the land use management, which I think the explanation of that said, for the discussion of accepting. Now, but that for me would be the question.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, how wide and representative was the survey? When the panel was appointed in 2004, I was not part of the team, but I learned that the panel traveled right throughout the provinces, had sittings where people were invited to make input, what would be addressed by the panel. I think the coverage was across the provinces. There were also logistical problems where in some areas the people who were supposed to come and make submissions, the panel, were unable to reach out because the venue selected gave problems in terms of transport. So people, there were such logistical problems. But the panel attempted within certain limitations to access quite a wide cross-section of people. There were also radio talk shows, there were also television appearances and kulume and so forth where people discussed the subject. It was very live. Workshops were conducted. Your second question, sir, are we slow? The road that we have traveled since 1994 in terms of redistributing the land. Currently we are at 4%, which is about 3.7 million hectares of land, which is not much. That is why in 2005, July, we had the land summit held in Johannesburg to take stock of what we have done in that area since 1994. People were saying that, you know, the pace of land reform is very slow. They enumerated quite a number of reasons and also made recommendations. One of it was review the willing seller, willing buyer as a principle for land delivery. They said scrap the subdivision, the restrictions on subdivision of land. They said expropriate land. They said the state must actively be involved in the land market and not to have a laissez-faire approach to dealing with transformation in land relations. There were a number of resolutions. The department, together with others of civil society, were given the task to keep attention to these recommendations since 2005. On the department side, a review of the willing seller, willing buyer has been completed, and then certain regulatory measures are proposed. Currently, that review report and the regulatory measures, together with the cabinet memo, is in the hands of the minister. As I say, I was lucky to have met this lady from Social Club yesterday. She said that report, to make sure that it reaches cabinet before the 15th of November, before the recess. In which case, we have gone a long way. We are making certain, we have analyzed the situation and said to cabinet, these are the constraints. In order to deal with these constraints, we recommend XYZ. And then cabinet has to consider that report together with the recommendations. And we are requesting cabinet to publish that document for public consultation so that, following the land summit, people are given the second chance to look at what government has done, what proposals are being put in place to speed up, to accelerate the pace of land delivery. And one of the measures that we are proposing, the chair has already raised, giving the state the right of first refusal to take its land. And the manner of things we are saying, we should be increasing use of expropriation. People fear expropriation, but we've been expropriating land from 1652. But the what our constitution provides is that just and equitable compensation. Within the expropriation, other people have said, there is yet another problematic. The solution, the payment of that 10% solution to the landowner for pain and suffering. Other people are challenging that and saying, both parties are suffering. If that 10% over the market price is to be paid, what are you giving to the victim of land dispossession to equalize, to balance? What we are proposing there now is to come up with a balancing act that will enable the health to give up certain privileges in order that the pendulum rises to hit up the disposal so that at the end of the day we get the equilibrium situation. It's not a very easy road to travel.
Yes.
Oh, the chair, I'm sorry. Moratorium. What activities are I think not much in the way of putting that recommendation into effect as occurred. As I said, on the 19th of September, the Interministerial Committee was inaugurated. They are yet to meet, I think, some of these issues that needed attention needs to be brought into their second sitting for the that IMC to decide on what interim measures need to be taken on things that need to be taken up quickly, like the extension of the moratorium on state lands and you know, issues of penalties for fracking. I think those are easy and so forth. But I think what comments we are getting here, we are going to table at their second sitting so that they are aware of your views. Yeah. On the private land, I think the report is very clear. Moratorium takes place on the land that is in the hands of the state. On private land, the legal opinion that we have brought is that in the absence of a fair policy and legislative framework enabling you to put such a moratorium on private owned land, you can't do it, it will be unconstitutional. So, at the moment, the state is not contemplating a moratorium on private land. That can only be possible with the amendment of the Constitution, Article Section 25. Otherwise, in the absence of that, we would be, you know, violating the sanctity of Section 25 of the Constitution.
Monday is the lunch overnight. What time is it? 12:30. Okay. Members, I'll take 10 minutes follow up questions. Very brief ones. We never had even tea break, so. Honorable, let me take hands again. As was Honorable Van Mantuli.
Okay, thanks for the question. You see, my concern is one, you see, when the response and the test response, as one said, if we succeed to regulate the foreign land policy, I'm wondering about that because if we succeed, the end goal is not the five of us, you see. I was very, very uneasy about that technology if we succeed. The other issue, briefly, is the question of the willing seller, willing buyer. You know, Dr. Swan, you are still telling us about the 7th of July, the 7th of November 2007. It seems to me that these processes are so slow, you know. You have that conference, in 2005. Those recommendations are still not implemented. Why? Tell us why. The last issue here, this result classification. You know, the ANC is on record as a non-resident organization. We will be celebrating centenary in the next 5 years, being known as a national non-resident organization. There's no doubt about that. But, there is no but. But, I think my honorable Mr. Reyes, but you see the problem here. The beneficiaries of this policy are the only people who are making noise. They are making noise for the beneficiaries. You know, one of the men, he said he will recommend later, I suppose, that this must be debated in Parliament. You know, I'm very clear. I can tell you now that if we make that decision, I will be the happiest man. But we'll take them between us at that table. I can tell you now. We'll take them between us. And we'll be fair to them. But we've been really very cautious and sensitive. We'll tell as it is, keeping it clear. The last issue, the benefit from foreign investment. You know what, Jefferson, the responder said, these benefits that we recognize, this is something. You cannot compromise. You know, the agencies were formed on the basis of land in 1912. You know? Even when it was still a native congress, before 1912, the east of the land was the cornerstone of the ANC. When it was still called the native land, the native organization, was the whole native land. You know? So that's what the Asapota is. This land belongs to the citizens of this country, not Guatemala. I don't want to take it further, but I'm telling you. This question of saying, let's look at the benefits of this and government, not the rubbish. You know? I mean, we're going to compromise our land. What's the employment? Why? Why to say, oh, come, boss, employ me. And own the land, not that we employ me. Why don't we employ and create that ourselves? We create employment ourselves. On the own land. And that is critical. Thank you.
It's been covered,
okay. I made a proposition in Virginia, and I want to formally propose now that we, that committee asks that this report be debated in Parliament.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just one question. You know, Dr. Spanda, when asking on the funding issue, I've been listening carefully, but I have a concern. As a result of this funding and other systems of production, our people find themselves owing banks and other financial institutions. Now, banks are taking the land that the people so need. And the banks are reselling that land. Especially the land bank, selling it to private sector. Now, I wanted to say, can the state compel the bank to give first preference to the state when selling that land? Number two, the land that is in private hands. I was going to cite the Constitution, as you did. But there can be a mechanism that says no land can be sold without the approval of the state. If you can look through the Constitution and work out on the heads and so forth and come up with something that will compel everybody who's selling the place to inform the state first that this land is for trade and what are you saying as the state. We cannot be sitting back and looking at our people suffering, looking at our people squatting, looking at our people being evicted, looking at our people being hungry. We cannot do that. We need to take, even if it means steps that will make us enemies of other people, but we need to do that because people are suffering out there. Thank you.
I think I want to say that the difference between myself and the members of the portfolio committee here is one. I'm a civil servant. And you are politicians, you make the laws, I give the time to those laws. I'm careful on what I say. I agree with Larissa's point, but I prefer that it comes from him and not me. I agree with you. As a civil servant, I need to tread softly. I do not want to be seen as a politician when I'm a civil servant. I would rather, whatever, you know, the statement that you made, your last point, it comes from the members. You have that right, the privilege to do that. I don't. I think I'm second limit. Similarly with Mama's last point, I'm not going to pronounce on that. It is something that the politicians here must debate, and Internet has proposed that this report be taken to Parliament. I think we will take cue from whatever politicians in Parliament would have debated on and agreed on. I come to the other issues, recertification, it was just a comment, I'm not going to respond to that.
Thank you.
willing buyer, willing seller process is law. Yes, I'll tell you it's law for one simple reason. In the policy unit, we are only two people, Colin Rocker and myself, who have to deal with issues right across the department. Second, that review needed.
Employer, yes.
And all these things involve research, because you can't, in the absence of research, in the absence of data, you can't just write from my head, because people will say, what evidence do you have that this is so? For example, we had to look at, in the review of the willing seller, willing buyer, look at the price share trends over 30 or 40 years. It's research. Determine the trend, where we purchased this land. What pushed up the then demand? In all those things, we need empirical evidence. And it takes time, particularly when one person is spread thin over the ground. But I would want to say that we have a product right now, which the minister has accepted in principle. That is why she is taking it to cabinet, for cabinet sanction, its publication, for public comment. And you were worried about my statement, if we succeed. It was an unfortunate language. Yes, I want to retract that, if I said it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Even though you are in here, you know, the issues of capacity. Because if it takes you, for instance, 7 years, to take on the appeal, so it will take another 7 years, introduce this moratorium of 3 years. So, you're not responding. So, now, I'm saying that this matter of capacity, what do you think that it will take for this report to be like? On a capacity point of view, that point needs to be grappled with for 2011. But lastly, as we told members, this issue of the debate, we'll positively look at it, except to caution that it is not a final report. So, any opinions that we have, that's not a way of getting that through to the department. I would be much more inclined to debate the final report. I think that would be much more productive. Otherwise, we will put ourselves into some political gymnastics in the House. So, no one has to be much more substantive in our debate in the House. So let's debate the final product. I take this opportunity to say thanks for the presentation from Dr. Lana. Hopefully we will get the submissions from the members. But of course, the members want to be very friendly, but I'm just saying this will be much more useful. Thank you very much.
No. I'll make a formal proposal, Mr. Chairman. So you, I put a formal proposal on the table, and you have to take that. You cannot get your own what you think about it. If you don't want to take this on the table, I'll anyway do it in Parliament this afternoon. But you have to take, if I make a formal proposal, you have to take it onto the table. That is just procedure.
If honorable land then has listened to me, I'm going to approve you on that issue. That's why the proposal will be positively considered, but it is advisable for us to consider debating the final report. So, either way.
I'm very sorry, Mr. Chairman. You cannot make a ruling on a proposal of one of the members of the committee. You can say, yes, let us put it on the table and vote on it. That you can do. But you cannot make a ruling on it. I'm very sorry, you cannot.
I can, because I'm providing leadership to the committee. And
What happens to democracy? Isn't that what you stand for?
I stand for the movement, not for anarchy.
Absolutely.
And that's not what I'm saying for anarchy. So I don't allow anarchy. So members is right in the...
Ask the Sabi, Shalom Kuma.